Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The Prison Journalism Project provides incarcerated writers with the tools and training to establish themselves as credible journalists so they can meaningfully participate in decision-making processes that impact them and their communities. I caught up recently with the co-founders and co-executive directors of the Prison Journalism Project, Yukari Kane and Shaheen Pasha. Here's that interview.
I'm Shaheen Pasha, and I'm one of the co-founders and co-executive directors of the Prison Journalism Project.
And I'm Yukari Kane, and I'm the other co-founder and co-executive director of the Prison Journalism Project.
The Prison Journalism Project is both a publication and an educational training initiative that Yukari and I launched in 2020. And our goal is to train incarcerated writers in the tools of journalism and actually to ultimately create a national network of prison journalists. What we believe is, in addition to publishing people's works and their thoughts, we believe that training and education is sort of the foundation of what we do as an organization. And to really be able to give our incarcerated writers around the country the tools and the skills necessary to be able to do real journalism, real credible journalism, will actually give them the ability to have a seat at the table when it comes to discussions and policies related to criminal justice reform. So that is basically what the point of the Prison Journalism Project is.
Tell me about your Prison Journalism Navigator.
The Prison Journalism Navigator is basically a toolkit with a lot of resources and information that we have developed over time that we wanted to share with journalists and newsrooms that who want to work with incarcerated writers and people around around this community. And it came about as a result of a fellowship that I had just recently completed with the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. And, you know, our goal, as Shaheen talked about, was we want to train our writers in the tools of journalism to be reporters and journalists and to report from the inside, including their first person experiences, not just for us, but for anybody, all the media organizations that would be interested in incorporating that perspective into their stories about criminal justice and incarceration. And so, and we know that it's just a really, well, we know firsthand that it's a really complicated area. There's so many logistical information that you need to know, practical information, safety information, both for the reporters on the outside and the newsrooms on the outside, but also especially for our writers on the inside. And so we just we wanted to facilitate this because our goal isn't to publish stories from our writers. Our goal is to help them become journalists and reporters in their communities.
Talk me through some of these things. Let's go through, talk me through some of the different different aspects of this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first the starting place is always how do you communicate with people inside, right? And so we have a primer called Communicating with Prison Journalists, and that's something that Shaheen and I really worked on to kind of dump all the knowledge that we've accumulated in working with writers as instructors and teachers, and also as executive directors of the Prison Journalism Project, and just communicating, you know, how do you communicate by phone? What are the things that you need to know by mail, in visit, for example, since COVID, video visits have become more possible too. So what are all the ways that that you can communicate, and what do you need to know about them? What are the rules? And then closely following that is a state-by-state guide. And so every state has their own rules and regulations. And so depending on the state, there are different services that they use. There are different rules and restrictions. Some of them are stricter than others. And so this was something that we needed internally, because we have we've published almost 500 writers, and we've got about 1,000 in our database, including those who are still waiting to be published, and have also expressed interest in publishing with us. And so we're always trying to communicate, and we need to know, for example, if we're going to try to send in training materials, what is the maximum number of pages can we send in? Because if you break the rule, it gets sent back. So that's a another feature. One of the features that I am really proud of is the Reporter's Glossary of Prison Jargon. Lots of words and terminology and concepts and that we don't understand out here. And so this was something where we played the role of an editor, and we had 17 writers who are incarcerated and formerly incarcerated send us the most commonly used terminology in their communities in the various categories. And so we compiled this using that information. And the goal here was to really clarify what some of the words that are often used are, so it can be incorporated into news articles and feature stories without having to guess at what something might mean.
In terms of working with obviously to do this work, you've got to do some interfacing with the prison authorities, the guards, the wardens, and all that. How much do you find much resistance from those folks? Or are they? I mean, on the one hand, well, this is a good tool. It's useful. Rehabilitation, learning new things, that's good. On the other hand, finding out what's going on really inside a prison, I could imagine some prison authorities might not really like that idea. How does that work?
Well, I think what makes us a little bit different is that we're not tied to a specific program that is working with each individual prison's educational initiatives. What we're doing is we're an independent initiative that has a one-on-one relationship with all of our incarcerated writers. So we actually don't need to go through permission, because we're sending things through the mail. And we're, you know, just directly contacting our writers. Our writers reach out to us. They ask for, you know, submissions guidelines. They ask for writing prompts. They ask for training materials. So what we do is we send that material in directly. And, you know, of course, there is always a concern that, you know, the prison officials will get upset. I mean, traditionally, the relationship between, you know, prison authorities and journalists have been strained. And it's one of those things that we're actually trying to show, that journalism and showing what's happening inside is actually in the benefit of everybody, because it really, transparency makes things better. And what we're finding is that some prisons, even that we were kind of thinking, oh, wow, you know, this is going to be problematic, they're actually, you know, excited by the fact that some of their, you know, their incarcerated residents are doing this. They feel it's good for them, and that they are actually exercising this creative tool and doing good work. And in, you know, one case, in a couple of cases, actually, what we're seeing is that our training material is actually being allowed to be used inside of these prisons for our writers who are taking these courses and working with us to be able to train others inside. So it's kind of, for us, always been that we didn't want to be the sole, you know, purveyors of this information. We wanted to be able to give it to our writers, to our people, and have it spread sort of organically. And what we're seeing is that that is happening. And so when you look at that, when you look at the excitement the writers have of seeing their bylines, of being able to tell their own personal stories, to be able to tell, you know, what is happening inside prison, which doesn't always have to be something horrific. I mean, there's a lot of life inside prison as well. There's community, there's, you know, there's relationships, and, you know, good and bad. So when people see that, I think it actually does show there's a lot of benefit to for our writers to what we're doing?
I would, if I could just add, I mean, having said that, I think that, you know, safety is a real concern because there are many more prisons that are very wary of publishing than there are that are accepting. And so another reason why we wanted to present our experience is just so those who are coming into this and are newer, you know, have some context for what they are doing or what they're about to do. And so we have another feature that we have in the toolkit is a page on the safety of writers. And I think that Shaheen and I are both journalists and we love getting that story that nobody else has. And I think, you know, we know of some reporters that come in and are really gung-ho about unearthing some information and some fact that hasn't been known before, breaking a story, doing some investigative reporting. And I think it's really important to be cognizant that there are severe consequences for the writer inside. And there were just some guidelines that we wanted to relay about that. And the first and foremost is that people inside are not free. And so the law might say that they have First Amendment rights, but they don't necessarily when you're not physically free. And whatever the consequences might be to the reporter, the consequences for the writer can be a lot more severe, even if it is unfair. And so so there was that consideration as well, where, you know, we don't think that the way that we're doing it is the only way. And we certainly hope that other reporters will give us their insights about how they're doing this work. But we wanted to share what we've experienced in case it's helpful.
This is my conversation with Yukari Kane and Shaheen Pasha, co-founders and co-executive directors of the Prison Journalism Project. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. In addition to doing this this work, the nonprofit, you also teach journalism. How do you find that your work with the prison journalists in any way informs your teaching work outside with the unincarcerated folks?
I'm so glad you asked that question because I absolutely believe that the work that we do with our incarcerated writers absolutely spills over. I teach at Penn State. I teach journalism at Penn State University. And what I've found is that just even the way we break down the basics of journalism, it translates so well to my students across the board, but it also allows me to be able to talk to my non-incarcerated students about issues like the language of incarceration and how words matter when you are reporting. And I think that a lot of journalists don't think about it. You know, when they're writing about incarceration, they're very, you know, quick to use, you know, words that, you know, like inmate or felon or things like that, which have just become part of the, you know, the vernacular. That's how you speak about incarceration. And the focus of their stories is often very much on the crime. It's on the information given by, you know, the prosecution side, by the police's side, because that's easier to access in many ways. So you'll see a lot of stories being framed that way. And what's really been great about this work is that when, you know, we are working with our incarcerated writers and I'm telling their stories, I'm teaching them how to write in certain ways, I'm able to take that back to my students in my classes and say, okay, you know, don't do the lazy reporting. How are we going to get additional information on this? How do we talk about people? How does this word make you feel as opposed to another word? How does it change your point of view? And that's actually made them take a step and say, wait a minute, I didn't realize that I was perpetuating stereotypes or negative connotations in my writing. And it makes them become a lot more thoughtful. And just kind of bringing it back to the Navigator, that's actually a section on there as well, the whole language of incarceration. Because just like the outside reporters don't necessarily think about the way they are portraying incarcerated people, a lot of our writers have never thought about it. They've never thought about what it means to call themselves an inmate or to identify themselves through the lens of the crime that they've done as opposed to their humanity. And at the end of the day, as an organization, we believe that, you know, our writers have the right to refer to themselves as they choose. That's their agency, their right. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about how certain words are going to make outside readers, outside of your little world, how it's going to make them see you and see what you're writing. And I think when I've had those conversations, because I still also teach in, you know, in person, or we teaching in person with incarcerated people, it makes them take a step and go, I never thought about it. Inmate, that's a number. That's my number. That's just how I've always referred to myself. And even if they choose to refer to themselves as that, I want it to be an informed decision. I know you, Kari, feels the same way, that you choose to identify yourself how you want, but you should know kind of what goes into it and make the decision based on your own understanding of it, as opposed to what people have told you about you.
So true. That's the stigma. It's internal versus external, the outward facing versus the, you know, self-referential. I can refer to myself as an addict. I can refer to myself as an alcoholic, but nobody else gets to do that. That's, you know, I am a person first. I have a person who maybe had a substance, who had a substance use issue, had a problematic relationship with alcohol. I'm still a person. I can call myself what I want to. That's fine. And a person who's incarcerated can refer to themselves as they want. But to that outward facing thing, you know, what the public thinks is going to be shaped by what they see. That's so important. Read one of the, there's an article I think you folks had just recently from a mom who's incarcerated. Really touching, and I'll weep if I talk too much more. So could you talk about that one? It was Mother's Day not long ago. So
yeah. So that one is probably part of the Love Mom Project. And this was something that was actually generated by a student at Harvard who is one of our volunteers. And she really wanted to see if she could learn a little bit about and shed light on what motherhood is like behind bars. And so she applied for a fellowship at her school, got it, and started collecting these stories, reached out to the women in our community, and then we've been publishing them as they come in. And so this is, you know, we intentionally launched it for Mother's Day, but this is a project that we hope to keep continuing to add to. And it's one of the ways that we're learning about how to collaborate with outside writers, reporters, students, and writers inside, and to shed light from within the community.
Tell me what you do have student volunteers who work with you, right? How do they come in? What are they like when they come in? And what are they? And how do their perceptions change as they get into the program?
So we have a very robust volunteer program. All of our transcribers and many of our editors are volunteers. For the editing, we do require a little bit of experience because we need that. But we do have a fair number of students who come in as transcribers, and I think they like it because it's self-paced. You could do one a week, you could do two a week. Sometimes we ask for help and they respond, and it really opens their eyes to what is going on in this world. And it opens their eyes to a community that they may not have thought about before. They may not know anything about. You know, hopefully it enriches their education. A lot of them have taken courses in criminal justice, and we've also get a fair amount of interest from teachers and professors who want to incorporate service work for us into their curriculums, or sometimes we'll go in and talk to classrooms as well. And that's something we're doing right now on an ad hoc basis, but we do feel like there's an opportunity to do something more in the future, because, you know, if our goal is to help shed light in a way that will inform minds and change minds, then you know, schools are definitely an important place.
How is that going? I mean, are you getting a lot of interest from other schools, from professors and such? I mean, how many states are you at? Is the Prison Journalism Project active in currently?
I believe we're at 37 prison, I mean, 37 states with, how many prisons are we at this?
Yeah, so we're in over, let me rephrase that for a second. We have writers from 37 states plus DC, including some formerly incarcerated writers, the incarcerated writers are contributing from more than 160 prisons across the country. The caveat is that, you know, in some prisons it's one or two, in others it's dozens, or probably not hundreds, but yeah, I would say dozens, especially in places like California. I would say that the level of activeness is pretty proportional to how open the corrections department of that state is to programs, to educational opportunities, to writing programs, and publishing.
And just to kind of jump on that, when it comes to schools and professors, I mean, that's something that we're seeing a lot of interest in. I mean, I get emails from professors all the time talking about, you know, can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing? How do you do this? Like, how can we do this? How can we be involved? So, you know, we do have people that are educators within our volunteers. We just launched our first cohort of PJPJ School, which is a completely handout-based correspondence course that launched last summer. And we're still, you know, working through the modules for that. And we have, you know, educators who are on that faculty as well as being journalists. So what we're finding is that this is an area that a lot of universities and a lot of students are very passionate about and are really looking to grow. I mean, I've received a lot of support here in Pennsylvania, you know, for Prison Journalism Project and the work we do, because they see this as something for the public good. I mean, when you're talking about prison and you're talking about people coming out, 95% of people who go into prison eventually get out of prison, right? And what we're talking about is, you know, in some cases, giving skills as well. You know, even if they don't want to be journalists at the end of the day, although we love that, they're coming away with tangible skills, and they're coming away with book writing and research and critical thinking skills and social skills and, you know, the concept of working with other people. So these are all things that from just a purely educational standpoint really appeals to educators around the country, whether they're high school, whether they're university or beyond. So it's something that, you know, we're seeing a lot of positive interest in, and that makes us happy, because that's really, really what we want. We want people to want to be a part of this community.
Tell me a little more about the PJPJ school. I mean, I think we talked about it last time, but that was months ago. And and it's obviously it's progressing.
Yeah. PJPJ school, it's progressing. It was as we mentioned, it was the first cohort. So really it was our pilot program. And as a pilot program, it's been immensely educational for us, because we're seeing what works, what doesn't work, what we can do better, what, you know, challenges will come out. I mean, in the midst of our ascending these handout-based courses to our students, you know, COVID is ravaging prisons, and we started to see, you know, within prisons, the staff diminishing, which meant the mail rooms were getting closed, which meant that some of our writers haven't been able to progress past like module two because they haven't received anything yet. We've also seen people, you know, being transferred, or, you know, suddenly, you know, finding themselves going somewhere else. And it really showed us the challenges that come with doing this work, but that really helps us to be able to make this program evolve. And one of the things we also realized is that our current cohort is 12 students out of the entire country, out of hundreds of writers who are eager for this kind of training. So as part of our next step, we are realizing that we, in addition to these classes, need to provide more self-directed kind of courses that allow our writers to have the material to be able to go at it at their own pace, and then not go back. Right now, they go back and forth with us, and we give them the direct mentorship and, you know, go with the material they're sending in. But if we were just to run that program, we would never be able to get to all the people that really want this training. So the self-directed courses will allow them to be able to work through them themselves and then be able to send us deliverables that we can publish and use on the website. In addition, for the fall, we're planning an advanced workshop that will be just for the, you know, about five or six incarcerated students from around the country. That's actually going to be led by Bill Keller, who's the former executive editor of the New York Times and, you know, the former founding editor-in-chief of the Marshall Project. He is also chair of our board of advisors. So he's planning to launch his first kind of really targeted, like, advanced class to really work with some of our best people, which we're very, very excited about.
So new in a project, I'm assuming that you don't have any graduates who've been released from incarceration yet, or have you?
We have a few that are that we would consider to be members of our community, and so it's still early days. We have actually one writer who is now one of our volunteers, which we just absolutely love, and does transcriptions for us. And honestly, I don't know how he has how he can squeeze us in, because he's got a full plate, but he does, and we're grateful.
That is terrific. What have I not asked that I should have?
That's a tough one, but I guess, you know, the one thing that we would emphasize is that we really are sharing this Prison Journalism Navigator because we hope that it'll start conversations, it'll start people thinking, in addition to being a resource. It is, you know, and we can't emphasize enough that, you know, what we're doing is not the only way. For example, as soon as we put that out, we heard from one of our volunteers who has an incarcerated loved one in the federal prisons. And she's like, you know, what you've got in the federal prison section of the communications guide is not the reality. And so, you know, we're setting up a call with her to get the ins and outs so we can share that. And so this is a living document or a living resource. It's only going to be as good as the input that we can make. And so, you know, there might be things where people say, well, this isn't what I'm actually seeing on the ground. And so we want to hear from you. We hope you'll use it in however way it's useful. And let us know, too, if we got something wrong, because we're not perfect for sure.
Anytime you're dealing with authorities, there's the rules that are written, and then there's how things really work. And that's that is so cool. So now, to make it easier for people, give me the website and, of course, social media, but also the website so people can find this terrific resource.
It's prisonjournalismproject.org, and the Prison Journalism Navigator link is right up at the top. And people can follow us and see the stories that we're publishing on Instagram and Twitter at prisonjourn. So it's prison, JOURN. And I believe on Instagram it's prisonjournalism.
That was my conversation with Yukari Kane and Shaheen Pasha, co-founders and co-executive directors of the Prison Journalism Project. They're on the web at prisonjournalismproject.org. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.
Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard.